There's too many sea otters, but not enough Chinook. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Marga Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. Some legislators hope to find ways to get around federal prohibitions on establishing sea otter bounties. Backers say the payments could increase legal harvests and slow the otter's population growth. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Sponsor Bert Stedman proposed Senate Bill 60 to set up a state-funded $100 per hide bounty. It would only reward coastal Alaska native hunters since federal law prohibits others from taking the marine mammals. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has made clear that a bounty would violate the Federal Marine Mammal Protection Act. That's because such payments could affect otter harvests, which only the feds are allowed to do. But some lawmakers think there's a way around it.
I do not agree at all that the state is not entitled to make that fee. I believe we have that absolutely within our sovereignty.
Anchorage Senator Liesl McGuire is vice chair of the chamber's Judiciary Committee, which recently took up the bill.
Where I think the concern is perhaps the word bounty. Bounty implies incentive. Bounty conjures up all kinds of images, and maybe what the circling back is to say it's a subsistence artisanal offset fee.
It incentivizes taking sea otters.
Alpheus Bullard is the legislative attorney who issued an opinion saying the bill will likely not pass federal muster. He says when state and federal law conflict in this area, the feds win.
At the point that we're just providing a bounty for these taken sea otters, that this is a state law which is really inconsistent with the protection of sea otters, which is the purpose of the federal act.
Backers of the bill want population growth limited because otters eat so many shellfish. They say commercial and subsistence divers and crabbers are losing their stocks, valued at millions of dollars a year. Fish and Wildlife Service spokesman Larry Bell says that concern is not part of the federal law.
The Marine Mammal Protection Act does not address issues of managing marine mammal stocks regarding then their impact or be it beneficial or negative to other species of wildlife.
But some lawmakers want to see what they can do. They include Judiciary Committee Chairman and Senate Majority Leader John Coghill of Fairbanks.
My commitment is to work with the sponsor to navigate those very areas that you brought up. And with your minds and with the help of some of my staff who have legal expertise, we will navigate through this.
Sitka Stedman, the measure's author, says he's willing to consider something other than a bounty. He's suggested several times that alternative approaches might work better.
They don't necessarily have to be offset at the level where the individual's out harvesting it. It could be backed up into the tannery or into the marketing area. You know, we could work with that.
There's little chance the bill will go much farther this year, since the legislature adjourns Sunday. But it will continue over to 2014, the second year of this two-year session. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
And with a follow-up on that story, Upper Lynn Canal residents have also voiced concern about the increasing sea otter population. Some local commercial and subsistence crab fishermen say with their own crab fisheries threatened by sea otter populations, crabbers from communities like Petersburg and Ketchikan are finding better fishing up here. And while some local fishermen are empathetic to the crabber situation, they are also concerned about the effects on local stock. Here's the perspective of the southern southeast fishermen. With concern about the growing sea otter population on their fisheries, the Petersburg Borough Assembly appointed an ad hoc committee last month after choosing not to endorse Senator Stedman's bounty legislation. The committee had a wide-ranging discussion during its first meeting last week. Matt Lichtenstein of Station KFSK has more.
When he signed up for the committee, commercial crabber Annie Knight thought the group would be discussing whether or not the borough would support Senator Bert Stedman's bill. That measure would pay hunters a $100 bounty for every sea otter they lawfully kill. Otters are federally protected and may only be hunted by Alaska natives. While he acknowledged the otter issue was complicated, Knight suggested focusing on a simpler question.
Are we going to support our commercial fishing community or not?
No one debated the importance of supporting the town's lifeblood industry, but some of the other committee members didn't think a bounty would accomplish that. The group is chaired by Borough Assembly member and fisherman Kurt Wolhuter.
I've always intended on supporting the commercial fishing industry, but I personally don't think that Stedman's bill is the way to go.
For one thing, Walhuter was concerned about the legality of a bounty and that it would conflict with the Federal Marine Mammal Protection Act. As an alternative, Walhuter pointed to the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's approach on the issue. The institute teaches Alaska natives how to process and sew otter hides. It's also encouraged the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to change regulations that hunters and artisans say have inhibited them from hunting the animals. Walhuter suggested voicing support for those efforts in the hopes that it would encourage more hunting.
And I thought if there's anything that we could do at all as a community by jumping on board with them, and just making sure that we keep going in the right direction, or maybe get the commercial fleet behind them going, yeah, we think that that's probably the direction we ought to go to. And, you know, I mean, get as many voices as we can behind it.
While Walhuter and some of the other committee members didn't think a bounty was the solution, they credited Stedman's bill for jumpstarting the conversation. Instead of more otter hunting, fisherman and wildlife artist Joan Kautzer suggested coming up with ways the government could help crabbers and divers transition to different businesses like wildlife viewing or switching to other fisheries.
Maybe there'd be a way for a crabber to, like, be able to get good funding to buy another permit of a different fishery that they might be interested in? Or is there a way of doing a buyback for some of these crab permits? I mean, I think we, to really address the problem, we kind of have to think outside the box other than a few sea otters being opted to help out.
Still, the otter harvest was an important part of the equation for Brenda Louise. Louise works with the Petersburg Indian Association and serves as Grand Sergeant-at-Arms for the Alaska Native Sisterhood. She suggested liberalizing federal rules on the use and export of otter pelts by Alaska Natives.
If Native people had an influence on the policies with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and were able to create industry, management of the sea otter population, I believe, would be beneficial to the Native people and to the fishermen as well, and to the environment.
The Russian fur trade nearly wiped out Alaska's otter populations by the early 20th century. The state reintroduced the animals to Southeast in the 1960s, and they have since thrived. However, the otter's growing population and big appetite for commercially harvested shellfish species has put them in direct conflict with fishermen. As the otter population expands, crabbers and divers have been displaced from some traditional fishing grounds because they no longer support enough shellfish to catch. Some members called their impact a disaster and suggested it should be declared as such, which could mean state and federal relief funds. That idea didn't appeal to crabber Andy Knight, who said he didn't want to be compensated for a lost lifestyle. And Knight emphasized that it was not just a problem for commercial fishermen.
This is an issue that really involves all Alaskans. If you live a subsistence lifestyle in the Southeast, you are being affected.
Mm-hmm. Putting concerns like these, as well as suggestions for addressing them in writing, is the committee's ultimate task. The members hope to draft a resolution for the Borough Assembly to consider and eventually send on to federal and state officials. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The Southeast Alaska king salmon quota is down again for the second year in a row. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced last week that the allowable harvest will be 176,000 kings for all gear types, commercial and sport. That's 90,000 fewer fish than last year, which was down about 30,000 from the year before. The quota is based on a combined forecast of U.S. and Canadian Chinook runs managed under the Pacific Salmon Treaty. According to Alaska Deputy Fish and Game Commissioner Dave Bedford, those populations are down again. That's with the exception of the Columbia River, where there's a different issue.
The return to the Columbia is going to be large, but a very substantial and abnormally a large part of that run is going to be three-year-old fish, and three-year-old fish aren't 28 inches long. So we can't catch them. So there's a bunch of them, but they don't really count towards abundance in our fishery.
Southeast last saw lower king levels than this in 2008. Since then, the quota peaked in 2011. The king decline has been a statewide trend in recent years. Poor returns to the Yukon-Kuskokwim and Cook Inlet areas prompted a federal disaster declaration last year. Bedford notes that Governor Sean Parnell and Fish and Game Commissioner Cora Campbell have asked the legislature for substantial funding to boost king salmon research and management.
There's something going on out in the ocean, and I know because I'm a policy guy, I can get away with really precise precision statements like that. But But in any event, so I mean, I can't really comment, and frankly, nobody at this point can comment with any real substance to what that is. But productivity for Chinook is on a downward trend at this particular point. And so we're seeing that reflected here as we are elsewhere in the state.
In the Upper Lynn Canal, the smaller quota means visiting anglers have stricter bag limits than last year, and anglers will have to be more particular of their keeps during the Haines King Salmon Derby. Haines especially sees many non-resident anglers coming to the area for sport fishing, and those harvest limits for them have changed. From now through June 30th, a non-resident harvest limit is 3 kings. From July 1st through July 15th, the non-resident harvest limit is 2, and any fish caught in the first half of the year will count toward that limit. From July 15th to the end of the year, the harvest limit is 1, and any fish from before then will count toward the limit. To keep track of their harvest record, non-residents must record their catch on the back of their sport fishing license or harvest record. For residents, the bag and possession limit last year was 3, and this year it is 1. That will be a big change during the Haines King Salmon Derby in May and early June, when anglers try to turn in the largest king salmon during certain time periods. For more information, visit the Alaska Department of Fish and Game website. For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Special thanks to Ed Schoenfeld and Matt Lichtenstein for help with this report. And thanks for listening to your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.